We're going to start off with Caroline Wickham-Jones. So Caroline, if you'd like to take it away, please.
Thank you. Well, as is going to become blindingly obvious, I'm trained as an archaeologist, not as a storyteller, so things can only get better. But I want to start by taking you back through the mists of time to my training at the University of Edinburgh. And the world in those days was a very black and white place. And we were taught that Scotland didn't really have any deep time, because across most of Scotland, human settlement only went back about 6,000 years, which is really pre-recent if you're an archaeologist, to the first farmers who came to Scotland. And that the hunter-gatherers, the people who we call the Mesolithic people, who had settled in Britain after the Ice Age, they really only penetrated the southernmost parts of Scotland. Well, I was particularly interested in those hunter-gatherers, so that was a bit of a disappointment. But luckily I had other things that I was interested in, mainly stone tools and the different types of stone that people used to make their stone tools from. And so when a couple of friends of mine told me that they were off to the island of Rum to do some archaeological survey, I was quite jealous for two reasons. One was that on Rum there was a particularly nice stone to nap, a green volcanic glass called Rum Bloodstone. We call it Rum Bloodstone. And I was quite interested to know a little bit more about it and the way that it had been worked in prehistory. But the other reason I was jealous was really just out of cussedness, because Rum in those days was a very forbidding island. It had been a private island for many, many years, and nobody had been allowed to go there unless you were an invited guest. And for the last couple of decades, it had been a nature reserve, but you still had to get special permission to go there, and only about a dozen people lived there. So my friends went off to Rome, and they duly reported back to me that while they were there, they were shown a rather nice assemblage of stone tools that had come up from one of the three tatty fields that were still cultivated on the islands. And among those stone tools, there was a rather nice arrowhead, what we call a barbed and tanged arrowhead, and that suggested that the site was maybe about 3,000 years old and belonged to the Bronze Age. So I thought this was quite a good opportunity, and I got all the right permissions, and I started to put together an academic research design. I set out very carefully why the site was interesting, what sort of questions I would like to ask about it, and how I'd go about answering those questions. And I sent this off to Historic Scotland. Actually, I can't remember what they called themselves at the time, but anyway. I sent this off to see if we could get some money to do some work there. Now, at the time, there was working in Historic Scotland a newly appointed ancient inspector of ancient monuments, a chap called Noel Foyot. And unbeknownst to me, Noel had made it his mission, while he worked for Historic Scotland, to visit every inhabited island around the coast of Scotland. So when he got my research design, I'm sure he did look at the wonderful academic prose, but he was actually more interested in the fact that by giving us some money, this would perhaps be a good way to knock off one of the more difficult islands on this list. So we duly got our research grant, together with the condition that Noel would have to come visit us while we were working to make sure that we were behaving ourselves. And I put together a team to do some work on Rum. And in fact, we advertised around various university departments and got some names that might be familiar. There was a young chap who'd recently graduated from the University of Glasgow who went by the name of Nick Card. And in later years, when we were working on the site, we had someone who was still a student at Glasgow who called Neil Oliver, but that's another story. Anyway, we went to Rum and we dug an awful lot of test pits and we sifted an awful lot of soil and we found a lot of stone tools. We found lots of stone tools, thousands of stone tools. In fact, we found tens of thousands of stone tools. And what was interesting about those stone tools, and actually I've got some of them here from one of the test pits. What was interesting about those stone tools was that amongst them there were a lot of very, very tiny points. Points that, as archaeologists, we call microliths. And they suggested that the site might actually have been inhabited by the Mesolithic hunter-gatherers long before the Bronze Age people. But of course, I've been a good student at Edinburgh, and I'd imbibed all wisdom of my esteemed professors, so I knew that there wasn't any Mesolithic settlement, and I just kind of ignored the microliths and focused on the arrowhead. And when we got back to Edinburgh, we started sorting through our samples and putting together material to get some radiocarbon dates. And in those days, you needed an awful lot of material for one radiocarbon date. As a rule of thumb, we told ourselves you needed a sugar bag full from any single feature. So it was very different to today. But luckily, we had a lot of carbonized hazelnut shell, and we duly bagged it up, and I filled in the forms, and I noted down that I thought the site was about 3,000 years old, and we sent them off to Suwalk for dating. And then you waited. You waited a long time in those days. But eventually, of course, this is pre-email and all that sort of thing, so eventually I got an envelope back. And it's one of those days, I mean, I can still remember it, one of those days that you don't actually know it when you wake up in the morning, but it's going to change the rest of your life. Because when I opened that envelope and read the piece of paper, it told me that the site was actually 8,500 years old. So I was really shocked. In fact, as I looked at it, I can remember kind of dawning realisation that there weren't any other sites in Scotland with dates that old, that it was at least 1,000 years older than anything anybody had excavated in Scotland. So I had to kind of realise that maybe we were actually digging a Mesolithic site. Maybe those little microliths were right, and we were digging a Mesolithic site after all, and not a Bronze Age site. And we went on to dig a couple more seasons. But well, the first thing that I had to do, in fact, was to phone around my colleagues to tell them about the date, because obviously it wasn't just a thing where you could put a notice up on the internet. So I started phoning and writing to people, and that was where I got another surprise, because although many of my colleagues were really keen and interested and wanted to know more, there were some who found it very difficult to accept this kind of change in the accepted wisdom and paradigms that they knew and loved. And there were people who told me that, well, it was totally impossible for Mesolithic communities to have walked the length of Britain in that time, that we just had to be wrong, that we must have contaminated the samples in some way. Maybe we'd been smoking on site or done something nasty to the hazelnut shell. So I think, I mean, luckily for us, yeah, we went on to dig more seasons there and we got a lot more radiocarbon dates, and one of Tony's colleagues helped us a lot, and we did a lot of recalculating of samples and a lot of playing around with things. Gordon Cook was brilliant, and all the dates confirmed the age of the site. And of course now it's nothing. Now there's older sites around the north and the west of Scotland. But at the time, you know, I think it was one of the things that really changed my life, and it also changed the way I thought about things. It taught me some important lessons. It taught me, first of all, to question conventional wisdom and to believe the data, always to believe the data, not what people tell you. It taught me that you don't always get research grants for the reasons that you think you might. And it taught me not to worry about what my colleagues thought. It taught me that as long as I was true in my heart to the data, that was the most important thing. But I think the final and most significant thing that it taught me was that Scotland did have a deep history, and that deep history, now we know, we've pushed it back. Even here in Orkney, we've got sites going back 12, 13,000 years. So it taught me that there was a lot more to the past than perhaps we've taken for granted. And if anyone wants to look at the stone tools from the test pit, which was one that somebody forgot to note down which test pit it was, so they were thereby archaeologically useless, but really good for showing to people. I've got them and can show you in the break or whatever.